Welcome to the second season of the Duct Industry Podcast. Like in 2020, the podcast was realized in collaboration with the What's Up with Dogs podcast and the programmers of Color Collective. Join us for discussions on topics such as the limited representation of brown LGBTQ+ stories in the cinematic space, the lack of inclusivity in the mainstream press, and the possibilities of Caribbean avant-garde cinema. The Doc Industry podcasts are funded by Creative Europe, the City of Leipzig, MDM, and BKM. Thank you to our partners and collaborators for their contribution. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the panel discussion for Doc Leipzig, Germany. I'm Sridhar Rangayan, the festival director of Kashish Mumbai International Queer Film Festival and also a filmmaker. And I'm really, really proud and privileged to curate and moderate this wonderful panel discussion about brown lives to the fore, lack of representation of brown LGBTQ+ stories. And today we have three amazing panelists. I'm going to introduce them in some time. But I just want to introduce what the panel is going to be. Over the past decade or two, we have seen an upsurge of LGBTQ+ focused films occupying the mainstream space, both internationally and in India too. Especially in web series, there have been greater representation of the LGBTQ+ spectrum. But mostly white and black communities are being represented. And we wonder, where are the brown LGBTQ+ stories? Stories about South Asian LGBTQ+ communities. They're missing largely from the mainstream cinematic space. Not that they have not been produced. From My Beautiful Laundrette to Fire to, frankly, I can't even think of any recent ones, but we'll discover them during this discussion. There have been amazing queer South Asian filmmakers like Pratibha Parmar, Nisha Ganatra, Sonali Gulati, Sonali Bose, Shamim Sarif, Rituparna Ghosh, and Onir, who have consistently made LGBTQ+ focused films, but most of them have remained as independent or art house films. How do we break out into the mainstream space? What is stopping South Asian LGBTQ+ stories from coming to the fore? We will find out today in this panel discussion with three eminent and still emerging, all of us are still emerging, South Asian filmmakers and artists. So I'm going to just introduce the panelists right now. Arshad Khan is a multiple award-winning Canadian filmmaker who wears many hats. He's a writer, director, production designer, and film programmer with several long and short form films to his credit. After great success with its autobiographical film, Abu, which we screened at Kashish, Khan is currently developing his first fiction feature with support from Telefilm Canada and Sodec. His feature documentary film, Abu, is screened at over 75 film festivals and won 17 international awards across the globe. Congratulations, Arshad. He's a recipient of the Inspirit Foundation grant and several Canada Council and Quebec Arts Council grants, as well as a recipient of the Mel Poppins School of Cinema Award for Outstanding Overall Achievement in Film Production Program. Khan is also Film Festival Director of the Mosaic International South Asian Film Festival and a programmer for the POC, Programmers of Color Collective, an international body of BIPOC film festival programmers from all the top film festivals around the world. Welcome, Arshad, for the panel discussion.
Thank you so much for having me, Sridhar.
And next up is Kalki Subramaniam, who is an Indian transgender activist, artist, poet, actor, and writer. Kalki is the founder of Sahodri Foundation, an organization which works for the social, political, and economic empowerment of transgender people in India. Kalki's debut in Indian film happened with Narthaki, an offbeat Tamil film about the life journey of a transsexual woman, her quest for happiness, love, and finding her identity and true happiness. She became the first transgender actor in India to do a lead role in a major motion picture. She recently released a book, We Are Not the Others, the one-of-a-kind book, which is a collection of poetry, essays, monologue, conversation, and art. On March 8, 2015, International Women's Day, Facebook chose Kalki as one of the 12 inspiring women of the world who use Facebook as a community development platform for empowerment. In 2016, Kalki was nominated by L'Oréal Paris India as a Woman of Worth under the arts category. Welcome, Kalki, to the panel discussion.
Hi, Sridhar. Good evening from India. And thank you so much for inviting me, dear Sridhar.
Thank you for joining in, Kalki. Brilliant. Yeah. Next up is Sonal Gyani, who is a public speaker and activist, diversity and inclusion trainer, actor, and a filmmaker. As part of her work that spans more than a decade, she has done sensitization sessions for various stakeholders, including but not limited to corporate houses, workspaces, law enforcement agencies, educational institutes, lawyers, politicians, influencers. She has featured in numerous documentaries, films, and television shows. These include ZTV's primetime television show, Connected Hum Tum, Bollywood film W and documentary Purple Skies. She has co-founded the following initiatives: Yaria, one of India's largest youth collectives; Umang, a support group for lesbians, bisexual women, and transmasculine persons based in Mumbai; and Q Family, an online pride store. As part of her work, she has been awarded the Diversity Leadership Award by the World HRD Conference in 2016 and the Quirio Award by Six Degrees, an LGBT growth network. She has featured on the Better India's list of 8 inspiring Indian LGBT individuals, Rainbow list of 20 LGBT role models by Cosmopolitan, and India's 8 LGBT role models under 30 by GSE. Wow. Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you, Sridhar. I'm delighted to be here. I'm very excited that I'm on a panel with Arshad and Kalki. I think they are role models. Very delighted to be here with them.
Awesome.
It's a pleasure meeting you.
My first question would be to Arshad. Your film Abu has been a huge festival circuit success, having screened at 75 film festivals and won 17 international awards across the globe. How challenging was it to make the film, right from conception to production to distribution? It must have been a task. Please let me know what has been the process for that.
Well, thank you once again for having me on this really amazing panel. I feel like I'm among giants, especially because you, Sridhar, Sonal, and Kalki, you live in India and you have been fighting for human rights, very basic human rights. And your struggle is infinitely much more greater than mine, who I happen to live in, Canada, where there's not the constant danger of death. But I am from Pakistan, as you know, and Pakistan is far, far, far behind. So much so that you actually do not ever hear of any openly LGBTQIA+ Pakistani filmmakers who are actually living in the country. Can only speak up when you leave the country. The reason I preface with that is because I recognize my privilege and I want to use my privilege to uplift the voices of the completely, not just underrepresented, but invisible, because homosexuality is still punishable by death in that primitive country, I'm sorry to say. And so the war that you have led and won against Bill 377 is really enormous and really inspiring for the world, but especially for Pakistan. And I can speak on behalf of Pakistan on this. The reason why my film was so important is because when I was making it, there was no Me Too movement and there was nobody talking about these issues, especially of queer intersectional Pakistani Muslims. And also there was no conversation around childhood sexual abuse or that kind of issue. So I was treading very uncharted waters. And I feel that that made the film all the more important and urgent. And I really thank you, Sridhar, for being a champion for the film.
Arshad, tell us, how difficult was it to find basically the resources to make Abu? It must have taken many years for you to make the documentary. Did you find collaborators easy to come by? Did you produce it yourself?
Yes, it was actually very challenging to make the Abu film. Firstly, because it is so deeply personal. And as I mentioned previously, there was nothing like it that existed at the time. When I made a 3-minute short just for a competition, I had so much to say. You and I, all of us, Kalki and Sonal, we all have so much to say, so much of with media is really lacking a representation of people like us. So I had so much to say. I made a 3-minute clip and I really got very frightened. I made it for this Cuban hat competition, which takes place at the RIDM Documentary Film Festival in Montreal. And I got very frightened after I made the 3-minute clip because I was outing myself to the world and to my family and friends and so on. And we're very concerned about what people would think, for example, in Pakistan, where I do often go and my family still lives there. So I made that clip. And then with that clip, I was able to get some funding, and I was able to raise, I was able to do a fundraiser, Indiegogo, very successful Indiegogo campaign. And then I was able to get some Canada Council seed funding. And as the money came in, I kept working on the film. And I would work on it, then I would stop when the money would run out. And then, you know, so slowly I kept building the project. I kept getting rejections, but then I kept applying. And then I got a Quebec Arts Council grant. And I pretty much made the structure of the film, and the film got pretty much, you know, structurally, editing wise, put together by the time that I submitted, you know, and got shortlisted for Sundance. And that was amazing, because then all of a sudden, Canadian film bodies took notice of the project, because before that, none of them were on board. Then the National Film Board of Canada came on board, Telefilm Canada came on board, Canadian Media Fund came on board, and the CBC Television came on board. And that just like propelled the project forward. And I was able to, you know, complete it in the way that I had intended the film to be finished. But it took me 5 years to make this film.
I can totally understand. My own film, Breaking Free, took almost like 7 years to make the film. It's an 80-minute film, but like it took forever. Documentaries are complicated because you're following a journey. Sometimes you're landed up with 500 hours of footage and you don't know how to put them together. You know? But congratulations on Abu. Coming to Kalki, basically Kalki, like, I mean, you have been one of the forefront activists for transgender rights, done so much of work. But today we're going to be speaking about you primarily as an actor who basically was one of the first transgender actor to come out and play a part in a mainstream film like Narthaki. How did the role come to you? And what was your reaction when they said that we want a transgender person to play a transgender part? Most of the times, in most of the films, basically, the transgender parts are played by either male actors or female actors, and that's a huge problem. And here, yes, finally, Narthaki basically has a transgender actor. So how did the part come to you, and what was the experience?
The problem with Bollywood and all the Southern Indian film industry, which is, of course, Hollywood, Tollywood, Mollywood, as we call it, you know, the problem with this, when it comes to the LGBTQI issues, they're all the same. They're all very stereotyped. They have their own cis narrative scripts that they write. And when it comes to trans scripts, trans characters and all that, they have their own ideas that a trans person is like this, like that. They are stupid and they are sexual maniacs, and all these nonsense have been come out again and again and again in films. Until the 90s, there's not even one film that has really portrayed a transgender person in a very dignified way. And that came after Mani Ratnam in Bombay. And after that, a number of films did come. In Narthaki, it was, why Narthaki is special, my film is special, I would say, it's because it is a biographical film of a transgender person. So complete biographical, right from childhood to her adulthood, her struggles, her rejection in the family, her success in the society, her career. It's basically about that. The role actually came to me through an interview. I had been an IVLP fellow invited by the government of the US. I toured the US, Washington, New York, and all that. When I came back, a leading Tamil magazine, Ananda Vigadan, interviewed me. It appeared in the magazine, and then I got this role. The director wanted me to cast it. She has been looking for a person for more than 5 years, and she wanted to cast a transgender person. So that is the first time in Tamil movie for a trans role, a trans person was cast. And I played an entire movie. I play throughout the story, I'm there. And the movie got many awards and rave reviews across. Since then, there's been a trend to use trans persons for trans characters. But sometimes there are lead actors who play trans characters, but it always goofs up. I've seen movies in which non-trans actors play trans roles, and it doesn't really go with us, the community people. Because again, there is some sort of body language and stereotypes and all that. And that is why it is so essential that we play our character too. On the basis, it's like, why shouldn't a man play a transgender, or why should a female play a transgender? Yes, But when there are lots of transgender people who are equally talented and who are denied opportunities, we seek that chance, that opportunity be given to us. So that was given to me. And I want our community also to have more opportunities than the cisgender actors. Yeah.
So was a film based on your life story, or it was a different story where you have to enact everything per se?
I would say, even though the character of that movie and the character, my character in the movie was also named Kalki, because my director liked my name. So she basically took that name to the film too. But it was not my story. It is a typical story of a trans person when they come out in their teen, how most trans people are rejected by their families, how they end up with the hijra community, how they go for begging and sex work, and then they fall in love with a man, and then they get rejected, exploited, and all that. It's actually a true narrative. But the protagonist of the film fights and comes out of all these fall downs. That is the story. And that story itself is a true narrative, because that is what happens in real life for many trans persons. We fail in love and romance because Indian men, they have this idea about a female that we should have the ability to give birth, reproduce, and all that nonsense, you know. So we aren't like that. I mean, we have dreams, but we cannot satisfy each and everything that an Indian male desires, because I think as trans women, we are much more free and liberal than cis women in this country. And nobody asked me, are you married, Kalki? You're 45, why are you not married? Don't you have children? Nobody asked me now, but they asked my sister and my nephew. And if they don't marry and they don't have children, it's a problem with the society. But if a trans woman doesn't marry, it's not a problem for them. So I think I would say we are in more sense, transgender women are much more liberal in India and in elsewhere than cisgender women in many aspects.
That's a very interesting point. We're going to come back and discuss that particular aspect per se. Going to Sonal per se. Sonal, you have donned many hats as an activist, diversity and inclusion trainer, actor, and a filmmaker, very, very diverse roles. Which do you find the most easiest, and which is the most challenging, you know, out of these roles?
That's a very tough question. It's very situational. But I think like the easiest so far has been activism, because it's been some years of experience. The most satisfying is filmmaking. And I think the most challenging is acting. I think acting is more challenging because there's a certain vulnerability required, and it's a kind of performance at the end of the day. Filmmaking is most satisfying because I think I love collaborative projects, and there's a chance to work with creativity. And I think like in the space of activism, I've not been like, I think like I'm finding my balance with films, you know, and it's interesting to see where I can marry both of them.
Right. And how has been your filmmaking journey? You have made basically short films, and a lot of them are documentary short films. Primarily, you made a couple of narrative short films. How difficult has it been finding resources, basically finding money to make it, or finding people to participate in your projects?
I think like funding has always been a challenge. It's been quite difficult. And, you know, at a point, I think like two or three years back, I sort of decided funding or no funding, one has to make the film, you know? So if maybe that is my truth is I have to be a budget filmmaker, and that's how I'm going to sort of make films. And so that's what I sort of did, because I was like, I need to make something, like, you know, I'm not able to feel, I think, at peace without making something, right? But I think like in the last 2 years, I've been sort of waiting that no, there needs to be a little more funding so that, you know, the quality of the film also improves, because, you know, after testing and making films, you sort of also feel creatively that you want to go to the next level, which is where you feel like, okay, I want more funding. But I think that funding has been quite challenging, to be very honest. So challenging, because I will say that, so for me personally, I don't have an academic background in filmmaking. It's mostly been that I have been assisting people and then I decided to start making films. The only academic background I had was that I went for a film appreciation course. That's about it. But beyond that, I've really assisted and done that with, just got on the job. So I think like getting grants that way, because you're not connected to the scene in the way that maybe a film student would be or a film community would be. That's why I think like for me personally, it's been kind of challenging. But also I find that, there are the grants which come for queer films are very few and far in between. And what I'm finding is that the grant, even if it is on a lesbian story, sort of goes to a gay man who's making a film about lesbians. So not to say that they won't make a great film or that they don't deserve to get the grant, but I think like the pool is kind of very limited. So within that, it becomes difficult. So my way out of this has been that I've been looking for like angel investors or people to personally invest in the film. And I've had more, I've had more success there where when I'm wanting to make a story which is light and entertaining on queer women, I have funding from queer women. Otherwise, I feel like there's a kind of push to make a film that is pandering to a heterosexual audience, meaning that, I show you the violence, I show you the, so that a straight person gets that how difficult the life of a queer person is. But I think I want to also tell stories, and I think that's important, not taking it away, but moving beyond that and saying, okay, like now as a queer person, what does dating look like? What are the challenges maybe in dating? What can love look like? What is the possibility? I also feel like I want to make more some films which are happy as well, So, but it becomes a bit challenging to tell people, oh, I want to make a happy film. People don't want to fund that. Like, give me violence, give me, this, that. So it's been a little bit easier, I think, with, approaching people individually. And I think because also I'm just starting out, I've really just made short films, about 7-8 of them. I want to make bigger films now. It's a bit challenging to kind of jump into a bigger one without support. But I think like I began, right? I want to do it so bad that money or no money, I'm going to like do it.
Yeah, I think like people don't want to see very happy films of LGBTQ people. They want angst ridden. Why am I like this? What am I? Where am I going? What is the society beating me up? I know what you mean by that. Like, we just need more happy films for sure. Arshad, how challenging is it for South Asians to make the films, even in a country like Canada, which is supposed to be an equal opportunity country? Do South Asians get enough opportunities to make films? Why don't we see enough South Asian content coming out of Canada?
So actually Canada is doing really quite well, in my opinion. For example, CBC Television has just launched a new show called Sort Of, starring and created by Bilal Beg, who is a non-binary actor and writer and theater writer who had a very, very successful theater play in Toronto as well. So that show is making waves. And they also have, people like Zarka Nawaz, who made the show called Little Mosque on the Prairie. And also they had a very big mainstream comedy that became very successful called Schitt's Creek. And it had one of the characters who was, Rizwan Manji played the real estate agent, and it was one of the important characters in the show. So there's a more, nobody hands you rights or privileges on a platter. You have to fight for them. And, I don't know what the expression is, but you really just have to really fight for your rights, and you have to get them, and you have to raise awareness. And in Canada, for example, I'm doing my part with my collaborators as MISAF, and then there's the other festivals like Real Asian Film Festival, Real World, VSAF, and Montreal South Asian Film Festival. So a bunch of us are, showing the content of Canadian South Asian creators and trying to uplift and amplify these voices. And getting into the mainstream is tough, but there is, there is a way that we are finding in towards the, you know, better representation. I just wanted to also address what Sunil said, which is true, that, you know, cis voices or cis males or gay cis males are occupying the space far more than they should be. And there needs to be equity in the way that the funds are disseminated, and lesbian stories need to be told by anybody, sure, but definitely by lesbian filmmakers. And trans, and Kalki is saying that trans actors need to be working as well and making, you know, their own films and also acting in the trans roles. And that's, I think that's really, really wonderful that that's happening. I'm really excited about this time in the world.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing those views. Kalki, I just want to find out, like, how difficult is it for transgender people to find a foothold in film and media industry? If tomorrow you want to do a documentary film, how difficult is it to find resources or collaborators, or in fact, like, people who are skilled enough? Like, suppose you want to build an all transgender crew to do the film, you know? Do you think you'll be able to find a crew members who are trained, or do we need to do skills building for them?
I think that's a very beautiful question, and that is exactly happening right now in my life. But before that, I wanted to say that it's so fascinating to listen to Arshad and Sonal, because their stories are very inspiring. And it inspires me to break the struggles as well, because I feel that both of them have struggled and they have succeeded. And it inspires me as more than an actor, it inspires me to be a filmmaker too, which is exactly what right now I've been trying to do. I mean, in my 11 years of activism, I have been introduced to hundreds of people, but there were three, four, five, almost like 10 people was very special, my friends. And three out of that, like, two of them committed suicide, and one person was murdered in my friends list. And this has actually affected me so much in the past 10 years, their loss. And these are people who were not celebrities, nobody knows them. They were just ordinary, beautiful women, trans women. And I have footage of their dreams, their life, their, you know, times with them and all that. I wanted to collect all those footage and make a film on all these three women as one film. But I've been, it's been just so difficult for me to find, you know, a financier for the film, because they think that they have their own, you know, stereotypes about why should we tell these stories about three people who are not there anymore. And that really breaks my heart, because I value their life. I know how much they have struggled. And for me, it is important to tell their stories, because why did they die? Why was one person murdered? And what was behind that? Why was it easy for somebody to kill her? And why did my friends chose to die? These are stories that need to be heard. It's not only the pride, the celebration, the rainbow, the songs, the dances, the successes that we hear. It's also important to know the history and the struggles that my friends, unknown friends, went through, and how much they have sacrificed also for the movement, these unknown people. For me, it's personally important, and for the movement as well. As an activist, for me, it's my duty to tell their stories. So I've been trying to pitch in with the Pitch Local organization and private funders and all that. Nobody's ready to finance it, because I just need 5 or 6 lakh rupee only, because I almost have 50% of footage. And what I need is I need to film their friends, family and all that. And then I need to edit post-production and all that. But I don't have the money, and it's so difficult for me to find. I even last week, I put a campaign on milab.com, you know, milab.org. And then nobody was, you know, it didn't do well. It didn't even start, first of all, because I don't have a campaign manager, and it was difficult for me to do that. So I canceled that campaign as well. So that dream of mine is difficult. So for a trans filmmaker, I mean, it could be somehow with struggles, you can find roles for trans people somehow, not every time. But to be a trans scriptwriter or to be a trans creator is very difficult. I know my friend Ghazal is a scriptwriter, but she's still struggling to be in a mainstream successful scriptwriter. She's brilliant, but she's struggling. At the same time, as a documentary film producer who is also an activist, I am struggling too. And there are hundreds and thousands of stories like me that need to be told, yet are stuck without finances and because of prejudices and stereotypes that exist with the funders, also with the supporters sometimes. So that, how are we going to break that? How are we going to make sure that as a transgender filmmaker, my voice is not silenced? These are challenges I am trying to explore, study, and it's a tremendous job, but I'm ready to fight.
Yeah, I totally understand. Like, I mean, where you are situated right now, it's very complicated to find funding for documentary films. And also, like, I mean, also, like, they'll say, what have you done before? Whenever they want to give a funding, they'll say, what film have you made before? Do you have a portfolio to show? And that becomes the starting point is always difficult. I just want to ask you this particular question. There are films on gay and lesbian and transgender stories, but bisexual stories are hardly anything at all. Whether male bisexuals or female bisexuals, I've not seen them at all. So what is the stigma about bisexuality? You are a bisexual activist. You are a bisexual filmmaker. Where does the stigma come from?
I mean, like the representation that I'm seeing of the bisexual woman is a married bisexual woman. So there's this new web series that is pretty popular in India. It's, the title itself is A Married Woman. And wherein, you know, the protagonist is a woman who is in a marriage and she falls for, a woman outside of that setup. And so, I mean, like, I feel like there is this kind of confusion that is the only space we sort of see it in. Other time that we kind of looked at bisexuality, I think, was one in Fire. And then after Fire, I mean, Girlfriend was lesbian character. But after Fire, we saw Margarita with a Straw. And, you know, in Margarita with a Straw, I personally thought that, okay, this is the first time maybe there is a sensitive representation of a bisexual person. But I met the filmmaker at some discussion. And the filmmaker was like, oh no, this person is not bisexual, they are confused. And for me, it was like, okay, you know, one thought that, okay, maybe this can be a kind of character, but like not, at least within that discussion, that it was like a teenager who is going through, understanding and things like that. I feel like the resistance to the bisexual character itself is simply because I think the people who are writing those stories, I don't think they are very, I don't want to say familiar, but I don't think that they are consciously not biphobic. I think they haven't consciously engaged with the bisexual community in that kind of way. So a lot of people who are making a bisexual character, which is similar to, I think, the space around the bisexual bias in activism, is like, okay, if there's nothing different about being a bisexual. It's just the same. Like you're just a person who's now in a relationship with a woman. It's just like lesbian, but you could be in a relationship with man. But I think that there are so many layers to that bisexuality, which is like kind of completely missing. And then we have this other type, which is like, oh, you've got married, you know? So you are eventually, either you're going to be in a marriage or you are eventually going to get married. Those are the only two types we have. But there are bisexual women who are not married. I think that visibility is just not there. And bisexual men is even more worse. Like, I think when I saw Karan Johar's film, like, it actually makes it look like, okay, they are just cheaters or I don't know, like, you know, not. And the problem is that, especially with mainstream cinema, when you have the budget, you can research on the characters. There is more than ample community support available. And then when your character is sort of written with that kind of lens, then you feel like disappointed. And sure, I mean, I have disappointment, but the consequences are very far-reaching. It, like, I think it makes a kind of certain impression in the minds of people. And I think like they shy away from taking accountability for the consequences that we face, you know, because they didn't do their homework. And yeah, So, I mean, like, I'm kind of happy that, I mean, it's moving to at least having some good representation. So, for example, like, there's this web series called Feels Like Ishq, which came up, and it had one queer sort of story within that. That was really cool. Then I think Ajit Dastan's had like one representation around being Dalit and being lesbian. So I thought that like it started to change a little bit, and one was feeling very good. But then right in the middle, bang in the middle of that, we had a film by Ram Gopal Verma, which is like, it's a lesbian murder film. But when you look at the posters of the film, basically, you know, it's the imagery is very like, you know, you're hypersexualizing the community, and there's this kind of sensationalism and sexuality, hypersexuality that you're attaching to the community. So yeah, one feels that you're going few steps ahead, and then we are coming like we feel like you just when you're thinking, oh, the country is progressing, the stories are more starting to become little more inclusive, just right then, you know, you are like reminded that, oh, like, you know, progress is really a long way. And I think, you know, also, like, I mean, I know people are going to hate me for saying this, but I think, like, when gay films are filmmakers are making lesbian films, while the stories are cool and all, very sweet, and I think coming from a good place, they really don't know how women kiss. I mean, I think that when the physical intimacy that I'm seeing, like, by the films, at least the Indian films that gay men have made, where there are lesbians, I just feel that, you know, just like, I mean, like, that's where I sort of relate with Kalki, that in that body language, one can see that there is a difference, you know. And so one is hoping that, like, I'm still yet to see a film, even all these series are same. I'm yet to see a film where I feel that, you know, the bodies of and the intimacy that is on screen is authentic. I have not seen it yet, you know.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying about filmmakers being cisgendered or cis gay male and making a film on lesbian or bisexual. You want to say something, Arshit? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to say that in the West, they work with binaries. You have to be either gay or straight, and that's what sells. And it's all about selling. And in the East, we all often follow the Western model, especially when it comes to representing sexuality, or, you know, when we're finding our feet and finding our voice, you know, in this patriarchal world, post-colonial world. So get stuck in that idiotic binary. But bisexuality is very much part of our South Asian, Middle Eastern, Asian general culture, because if you look at the major kind of religions, why do they condemn homosexuality, right? I mean, they condemn it because they consider it a choice. So if you're considering it a choice, then that means that you obviously, by default, recognize the bisexuality of all human beings. And this is where often religious mullahs and those types, they get stumped. They're like, oh my God, how dare you pose this question? How dare you challenge me on my, you know, my homosexual side, because this is where you will get them, you know. So having said that, you know, that's why it's easier for people, you know, just to ignore bisexuality, or really they're frightened of bisexuality, especially in hetero patriarchal religious societies, you know, like so that's one thing. I also wanted to address what Kalki is talking about, which is very, very, very important, because this is like, we do not need to reinvent the wheel here, okay? When finding film funding, it's all about the noise you make. And you use your privilege and your platform. Okay, you've been in a feature film, you use your fans and so on, your fan base, you know? And you have to understand, this is a pandemic time. A lot of people are struggling, but our profession struggles always, no matter what. However, right now it's a very special time for our profession, because people are actually sitting at home and consuming profusely. So if right now people are not realizing how important filmmakers, media makers are, then they'll never recognize how important we are. We are essential to them, staying away, staying at home, staying safe, and that sort of thing. So, you know, you just need to make a lot of noise, and you need to use your resources, bring people amazing people like the people on this panel and so on together and really get your film made. Throw those clips out. And really, we should have a separate panel on how ways to get, like, you know, your projects off the ground in the most effective ways and try to find funding.
I take your words. Thank
yeah.
you.
So Arshad, like, I mean, coming to you, I just want to find out, like, have you seen a change in the representation of South Asian LGBTQ plus films over the last, you've been a festival director of Mosaic, the kind of films you're getting. At Kashish, we have been getting almost 60 Indian LGBTQ films every year. 60 Indian LGBTQ films being made every year, out of which we program around 30 of them. Rest are not really up to the mark, but 30 of them, they basically tell a very, very diverse story. Gone are the angst of who am I, what am I, they tell basically, but these are short films. They do not find a market on the mainstream space apart from the film festival circuit. And that's a tragedy. So we want to build those platforms where these short films can be seen. What has been your reaction? How has the shape of the South Asian LGBTQ narratives changed over the last one decade or something?
I think this is very encouraging news, what you're saying, that you're getting so many films. I do think it's a shame that there are not enough feature films. As I was talking about the noise that we create, you know, there's a lot of noise that, you know, BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color filmmakers in North America are making because they are quite fed up with the way that things have been. And also the Programmers of Color Collective came together a few years ago also for that same reason, because we were so underrepresented, and the kind of films that, for example, big mainstream film festivals keep taking are really narratives that feed into stereotypes. And when they don't understand what our severe struggle is, how serious it is for us to be able to make a piece of work, to be so open, to be bold, and what courage it takes for all of us people like Sonal and Kalki to, and yourself, Ridhar, to speak out and hold, you know, space for people like you and so many others. This is not in the Western, you know, narrative. This is not fitting in, especially when you show complex characters that are not in a binary, you know, the evil patriarch, the sweet, you know, abused woman, you know, they just can't get out of that thing. And so our stories are still not getting the platforms that they deserve and not getting, you know, the push and the love and the curation that they deserve in Western, you know, in the Northern global North. I feel that it's still a very long way to go, but we are there, as I said, we are there to make noise and to make them take notice that our stories are important. Also the way we tell them is important, and we are not in a level playing field. We do not have the same, you know, privileges that our contemporaries who are not brown, not Black, not Indigenous have, for example.
Yeah, we are all going to basically talk about BIPOC films per se. We're going to make a big noise. So Sonal, I mean, I want to just ask you, like, I mean, we usually been blaming the law all the time, you know, Section 377 for marginalizing us. There's a question for both Sonal and Kalki, you know. We have been blaming the law, the Section 377 for marginalizing us, pushing us underground. It's been gone since 2018. What is still stopping us from making more LGBTQ-focused films or making a louder noise? Is it patriarchy, or is it just that we have been so undermined for so many decades or centuries that we are not able to yet come up and have our own voice? Sonal, you want to go first and Kalki?
Yeah, I think that just because the law has changed doesn't mean that people are recognizing their privilege or recognizing the marginalization, right? So I feel like, sure, I'm not saying that since 2018 things haven't changed. We are definitely seeing the representation, mainstream representation is better. I want to say that. But I don't think it's necessarily been that now you are getting queer actors in the films or actors are coming out, or, you know, so I think, like, socially we have not still moved there. And I think that it's very important that queer filmmakers do make their films. And I think that We are ready. We are ready to make the films. But I think there are only few funding bodies who are willing to sort of fund. And I'm sure you've been in that difficult position where all the queer filmmakers in the country are applying for a grant to you and you have to make that choice, right? And it must be really difficult, right? Like, so I mean, like, the thing is that, but there are, I'm sure you must have noticed that there are so many new filmmakers who want to sort of make films, but the reason that it's not kind of getting translated is because there isn't enough handholding. I think that more handholding is required, and it can't be just Kashish who's doing that. I think that it needs to be part of other film festivals as well, workshops with within these larger mainstream filmmaking spaces where you are recognizing your privilege and making space for queer content, you know. Now, whether it's in the form of script writing, whether it's in the form of calling queer filmmakers, it's in the form of panels. I think like the mainstream space needs to kind of recognize the platform that they're, you know, give up that platform, give the platform to, I think, people. And I think like, I mean, frankly, even if they don't, queer filmmakers are going to do their thing anyway. It's not going to sort of stop us. But like, I think it's also the work of privileged people to recognize, you know, that privilege and make that space. So it's, I mean, it's kind of unfair that, you know, 2018, the judgment is gone and the entire onus is still on the queer people to make the noise and, you know, get that kind of support. Whereas I think it needs to be a little bit like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it needs to be coming from the mainstream now.
Yeah, I think definitely, as you say, the privileges has to be given, but we also have to snatch the privileges, obviously. That's both the places. But I totally understand and agree with you that, like, there needs to be, especially the OTT platforms can definitely make more space for LGBTQ plus content, the short films, which we are, as I said, 30 short films every year. So Kashish has a bank of 400 short films or 500 short films already, which has been there, and we need to put it out. If not a mainstream platform, we should start our own OTT platform. We are on the works on that. We'll figure that out. Kalki, what are your thoughts on that?
I think what just because the law has changed and is just because sexual, you know, same sex is decriminalized, Section 377 is diluted now, doesn't mean that really the entire society is going to accept us. I know that more than 70% of the people don't even know that Section 377 has been diluted. And they don't even know what is Section 377, of course. So, but they do know that there are lots of media portrayals. There are lots of discussions going on LGBT rights and especially trans rights in the country, in television and in other media as well. And lots of trans people are coming out and gay people are coming out too. But the thing with the film industry is that it's so occupied with stereotyping women already. You know, the Indian films are so occupied and engaged in that for over so many decades again and again. And even women-based films and women for women directors themselves, it's so difficult, whether they're lesbian or drunk, I mean, whether they're lesbian or bisexual or straight, for women directors, it's so difficult for them to establish themselves as directors. And they have been sidelined, and it's truly a struggle for them. And when it comes to an openly LGBTQI person, I'm talking about openly LGBTQI persons, it's entirely a very different story. It's going to be very, very difficult, and it has been difficult. And the successes have been very few. And even if they succeed, though they don't, that success does not sustain for the next films. So I think, but still, even though I sound a little bit negative, but I also wanted to say positive. It's positive because I have so much hope. And I believe that change doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. I mean, in September 2019, Section 377 was decriminalized. I mean, same-sex relationships were decriminalized. Homosexuality was decriminalized. But the changes, the progress, the understanding, the acceptance in the society for same-sex relationships will come only eventually. And a lot of things play on that. Our education system, our media representations, our literature, our art, everything plays a major role in upholding our rights. So it's not only our voices that needs to be changed. It's about these stakeholders, these representatives in the society who are very strong and who have a greater influence. Their representation about us is also important. So that is why I believe that we need allies. We need to make a lot of allies from artists, writers, you know, those people who believe in human rights and all that. And that would lead us to more support, more doors opening, more opportunities for us. But I truly believe that times are changing and there will be a lot of filmmakers, a lot of representation for the LGBTQI community in the mainstream form.
Thank you so much. I think that's a wonderful note to end the panel discussion on. I just want to mention, Arshad, that we actually screened a Pakistani film called Stray Dogs Come Out at Night, and it won the special mention at Kashish. Basically, it's a wonderful Pakistani film. We're making films across the South Asian continent, subcontinent, and I'm really happy that like more and more stories are being told. And if you want to make any closing comments, I would be very happy to hear that about Arshad, Sonal, Kalki. If you want to just say anything that to conclude the panel discussion, I would be very happy to hear you.
I was just going to address Kalki's point about allies. That is a really essential point, especially that is, you know, laws will only go so far, right, legally. But society doesn't change through just the implementation of just laws, right? Their religion or cultural prejudices, they are not going to change. Only visibility is going to change people's mindsets, you know, only being out there and being open. And I think that, as Sonal said, there just isn't enough solidarity from these cis folks for LGBTQIA plus representation. She named a filmmaker. I will not have any judgment on that filmmaker because they could have many reasons for making such a comment. They could be afraid for their, you know, well-being by representing someone, a character in a certain way. So, you know, I think that I wouldn't pass judgment on anybody, but these people, now we are more aware already. Enough voices have stood up, enough noise has been made, and we just need to keep going, and we really, really need our allies to amplify our voices, and we need to build these strong alliances, and we need to, you know, realize that activism and being an LGBTQIA plus identified person is inextricably linked, and there's no way to separate that. That will always be our struggle.
And we need to see your feature film come true very soon. Thank you for working on that, and I hope to see the film very soon. So, Sonal, you want to say anything?
All the best for that, Arshad. We're waiting for that.
Thank you so much.
I'm working on a very, very cute short film, which is really very personal. I always make personal films, and I'm working with a very big Pakistani Canadian actress, and I'm really delighted to be working with this big superstar in a very conscientious LGBTQIA plus sweet story. So thank you.
I just want to say that, like, you know, we are seeing some representation of little representation of brown people of color who are queer, but I think it's still like very conflicted characters and definitely no parental acceptance. I think it'd be nice to also have representation of parents who are accepting, because in India, like, I think I think it would make a huge impact to have any of these big platforms having supportive allies who are Indians. I think that is completely missing. So, you know, one hopes that we see that soon.
So funny that you say that, Sonal, because my film is actually about a mother who's going through the five stages of grief from denial to acceptance when she finds out her son is gay. So I'm also, I really wanted to see a film that was really about a mother embracing her queer child. And that's what I did, because I met this person who was an influencer on Instagram and is a physician and has just come out, young person, and is completely rejected by their South Asian family. So I thought, okay, I need to make this film now.
Really looking forward to it. Can't wait for it to come out soon.
Yeah, okay. I totally agree with that parental acceptance, because that's again my film Evening Shadows, which is right now streaming on Netflix, is about the mother's struggle. And parents really struggle a lot about, especially since they do not have the resources or knowledge about their children's sexuality, especially in small towns. And they struggle a lot. And finally, when they accept, it's such joy, it's such joy for the LGBT
community. Oh my God, Sridhar, absolutely. Your film, you know, those last 10 minutes of the film, it was just floodgates. What a beautiful story. Absolutely. That was very, very beautiful. So thank you for making that.
So we all will continue to make films, tell our stories. Thank you, Kalki, Arshad, and Sonal for joining in this panel discussion and sharing your thoughts, your views about why South Asian LGBTQ plus stories are not told enough, and we need to tell them more. And we'll all come together for sure to make it happen very soon. So thank you all. And thank you to Doc Leipzig, Germany, for hosting this wonderful panel discussion and amplifying our voices to the larger world. Thank you.
Thank you, Sridhar. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Arshad. Thank you, Sonal. It was beautiful being with you all.